This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanisen with Lynn Mark and Noel Lim in the studio this morning. In about 10 minutes, we'll be diving into the budget expectations from the tourism industry with comments from Nigel Wong of MATA, the Malaysian Association of Tour and Travel Agents. But before that, let's talk about EPF withdrawals.
So UMNO Youth has proposed that the government consider allowing workers to withdraw their savings in account one of the Employees Provident Fund. And former Prime Minister Dato Sri Najib Razak has concurred, suggesting that EPF contributors be allowed to withdraw their savings every 3 to 6 months. Now, further suggestions include limiting each withdrawal to between 5 to 5,000 or 10,000 ringgit, or even spacing out withdrawals instead of doing it in one lump sum.
Yeah, we're actually asking you this on Twitter right now. For Budget 2021, a suggestion has been made to allow EPF members to withdraw from account one. Should this be allowed? 17% say yes, just under 50%, that's dropped a little bit, has say yes with restrictions. 24% say no, and 9% say it's complicated.
Yeah, I think my immediate reaction when I read this news was like, no, it's a bad idea. So EPF CEO Tunku Ali Zakri Alias also says that retirement savings are really EPF money's, EPF members' insurance for their future well-being, and that allowing this withdrawal is really equivalent to eroding that protection. And if you just look at the numbers, right, EPF has reported that about 54% of EPF contributors aged 54 and above have savings of less than 50,000 ringgit for retirement. Hopefully this data has been cleaned up for, you know, perhaps people who have dropped out of the workforce prematurely. But really, it just goes to show that, people have actually very little in their EPF accounts.
But as Malaysians struggle to move on without jobs, and while they're trying to feed their families and keep a roof over their heads, what financial options do they have in order to survive? Weighing in on this, Firdaus Rosli, senior economist at the Malaysian Ratings Corporation, Berhad. Firdaus, thank you for joining us this morning. EPF is already allowing withdrawals via iListari. Given the dire circumstances people are in, do you think this proposal for people to dip into their EPF account one is necessary?
Hi. I have a short answer and a long answer. So my short answer is not really, because of three reasons. One is the proposal represents a short-termism perspective. Secondly, is the universality of the proposal is quite limited because it rewards those in a formal rather than informal economy. And thirdly, is because of it can be economically inefficient because of the paradox of thrift. So my long answer is this. From the short-termism perspective, I think the whole purpose of defined contribution by the EPF is to allow for consumption smoothing. So if the idea of withdrawing EPF account one is for poverty relief or employment insurance, then financing must come from the state. But if such withdrawal were to be allowed, consumption will unlikely lead to productivity gains. Thus, in order to replenish the loss in retirement savings, the government should either increase the retirement age or increase the DC rate in the future. Note that the current rate was last raised in 1996, if I remember correctly, but with temporary cuts over the years. So in other words, it can be politically challenging even when the economy gets better in time. Because from this perspective, it actually exacerbates the advocacy problems further. Official statistics show that 50% of the Malaysian population will be above 60 years of age in less than 15 years away from today. So assuming that their retirement age remains as is, although it's very unlikely, EPF members of 45 years of age and above today would have to work much harder to replenish their forgone savings. So from the universality perspective, about 11% of the total workforce are in the informal sector. So I think it will benefit more those in the formal rather than informal sector. So simply put, the so-called Makcik-kia cannot benefit from this proposal. And from the economic perspective, however, I think it's well known that lockdowns are very costly, especially a nationwide one. So if the present shock is a prolonged one, which is becoming very real by the day, then individuals may choose to hold off large purchases today in anticipation of near-term shocks. So I think the best way is to avoid a nationwide lockdown, because if you look at the retrenchment numbers, it spiked up in June and it has tempered off somewhere after which. So I think it should be okay for now.
So Firdaus, I mean, if withdrawals are to be considered, should it be means tested? What criteria should we be looking at to use to allow for withdrawals if this is on the cards?
If such a proposal is considered, then I think it definitely should be means tested to limit EPF withdrawals to those who are really deserving. But to begin with, the Labour Department and employers should comply with Section 63 of the Employment Act. The PK form must be filled and approved by authorities because there have been cases reported in the press whereby the government is not able to pinpoint the precise number of retrenched workers because of the gap between the application for EIS rather than number of forms that they get. And secondly, it should be, I think it should not also be disbursed in cash. This is largely not to deter eligible EPF members to spend on others but essential items, but importantly to avoid the conversion into other forms of savings by EPF. The government could also consider enrolling eligible individuals into financial education programs, but this obviously would mean that there'll be higher operating expenditures. So just keep that in mind.
Now, I understand that EPF right now only covers like something like 40% of Malaysians. And so how else can EPF support those who are in that 60%?
I think it's EPF hands are rather limited right now because first of all, the DC is not compulsory. So it's voluntary and then, as you rightly pointed out, only 40% are covered. So those who are not covered, in my view, should be financed by none other than tax or any form of state-run state finance. Definitely not through our pension pay, our pension savings.
And could you elaborate on that?
Here's the thing. Okay, I think we need to distinguish between the difference between poverty or income loss relief and consumption smoothing. So let me start with the first one. Okay. Poverty and income loss reliefs should be state-funded, either through taxation, debt, or assisted by the SOEs. The thing is, raising tax revenues is definitely out of question right now. So raising debt is fine in light of the recent debt ceiling increase and also with the low rate environment that we have today. So the justifications, my justifications are as follows. One, I don't think we need to entirely worry about the downgrade by the three rating agencies. Because the whole world is affected by COVID-19 and such as and the supply shock. So we need to borrow to ensure the survival of the people as well as the economy. And also our non-ringgit exposure is limited, so we still have ample liquidity to support higher issuance of MGS, GII in the near term. So low rates environment give us a lot of room for this as well. And I think fiscal consolidation can come later when the coast is clear. We have seen that in the 90s, whereby we have about 80% or more debt to GDP levels in the 90s. So we can still afford to go on this route as long as we progressively expand our economy in the future. From the consumption smoothing perspective, generally consumers have imperfect information on whether they should spend today or tomorrow. But generally, they are more rational for the future, but less so today. That's just human behavior. So I think we tend to buy the wrong products, make the wrong decisions today in order to prepare for retirement. So if this were to be allowed, then the government must also consider its own finances in the future, because things like healthcare and others would have to come to play to support the withdrawal in the early stage rather than later at retirement.
Firdaus, we've got just about a minute now, and you're talking on the different measures that could be employed by the state. Looking ahead to Budget 2021, how do you think we can help the B40 in a more meaningful way? What are the specific measures you, off the top of your head?
I think it's like I said earlier, if we definitely have to go for expansionary budget, and if we were to go towards 60% of the debt ceiling, or perhaps even more if it's allowed, I think we should go for it, because I think we should leave the EPF account one altogether at a side, because at this point of time EPF is already allowed for account two. So if account one were to be open for withdrawal, then, you know, in the future, this would have to be, you know, there is a precedent case for EPF to open up the account one for withdrawal as well. So this is quite tricky, because if we were to push for this, then, you know, we have to ensure that we have the institutional capacity, and you know, EPF must have the appropriate mandate and capacity to ensure that they have able to offer sustainable returns for its member in the future.
All right, Firdaus. On that note, thank you so much for joining us this morning. That was Firdaus Rosli, senior economist at the Malaysia Ratings Corporation Berhad, really just stating the difference between income loss relief and consumption smoothing when it comes to trying to determine the way to react to the situation at hand. Now we're going into a few messages when we come back. Budget expectations from the tourism industry with comments from Mata. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.